You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 15th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're expanding on some of the themes identified and analysed in UBS's recent Cyclical Market Forum. This quarterly discussion usually focuses on three economic scenarios and assesses the potential implications for investment in the year ahead. This time around, however, it was the inaugural theme-specific meeting, focused on recent dynamics within oil markets and their potential impact on asset classes and regions. We start today's programme with a broad sector outlook. With his thoughts from an investment perspective is Kurt Custard, who's responsible for the Global Investment Solutions Division of Global Asset Management at UBS and chair of the CMF.
From an investment perspective, the drop in the oil prices was very interesting. It's generally bullish for global growth, which should be good for equities around the world. However, there are pockets of equities which will suffer from this. So you're looking at challenges associated with the oil and the oil production companies that are maybe on the more speculative end of the spectrum. So that would put some concerns around high yield, that would put concerns around some equity names, and then the high-cost producers such as Venezuela, Nigeria, and Algeria. All those guys may lose, but in the long run, this is generally pretty good.
Michele Gambera is head of quantitative analysis in the Global Investment Solution team at UBS Global Asset Management. Here's what Michele thinks shapes the outlook.
You know, it is difficult to measure the supply of oil because there is some illegal drilling here and there, unfortunately also financing terrorist activities. But it is also difficult to measure demand because consumption is not always clear. And so there are estimates, and many estimates are based on statistical models that reflect also the past and not just the future. So since demand for energy was pretty weak during the depth of the global financial crisis, the result is that some of these models might underestimate right now, and therefore they might suggest that prices will be very low in the future just because they expect the demand not to change much.
What are the key factors that are likely to influence oil prices then, both in the short and medium term? And how much will this be influenced by the strength of demand? Making sense of these different scenarios is Kevin Allison, columnist covering global resources for Reuters Breaking Views in Chicago.
Well, in the medium term, so over the next year or two, I'd say, the main factors to watch will be whether or not we see a slowdown in U.S. shale output. And I think that a lot of analysts are factoring in a leveling off of shale this year. Perhaps not a decline, but they expect production to stop increasing at some point. And the second is whether Saudi Arabia and OPEC get together and summon up the political will to make cuts. And with the price stuck where it is, which is a little bit below $60 for Brent and a little bit below $50 for US WTI, I'm not sure that that's going to happen. So I think in the medium term, the oil price is very likely to linger in this kind of $60 range for the most globally relevant price.
What about innovation? How important is this for the sector? Michele Gambera again.
There have been a number of innovations done, particularly the fracking in North America, the tar sands again in Canada, and new ways to exploit existing wells more in depth across the world. At the same time, some have suggested to do very deep drilling in the ocean, particularly off the coast of Brazil. Some of these techniques are still experimental and are quite costly. We don't expect the Brazilian drilling to start anytime soon because we're talking about several kilometers of water followed by the several kilometers of rock and salt. So a pretty difficult task. And at the same time, a lot of these companies that have been working on this have developed new and novel systems. And importantly, they have learned what works and what doesn't work. And they have even honed their techniques much better. So we can expect to some extent a pressure down on the prices because these companies are becoming more efficient. At the same time, some of these innovations are just too expensive. They can only pay off with oil above $100 a barrel, and therefore they will be priced out of the market.
One of the questions raised by lower oil prices is, to put it simply, who are the winners and who are the losers? Did the Cyclical Market Forum throw up any surprises on this point? Kurt Custard.
There's sort of two areas to think about. Firstly, there are some clear losers, Venezuela, Algeria, Nigeria. They all have high costs of production, and it's going to take them a long time to get more efficient. And, you know, there are estimates that, say, Venezuela could only really sustain about another year of current price levels before it would result in some instability in their government. The winners are consumers around the world, and the winners are probably the strong producers in the U.S. So the big swing variable has been the U.S. production coming on stream. And the big surprise coming out of the cyclical market forum was what we call the elasticity of supply, which means the ability for them to turn on and turn off the pumps relatively easy. The idea that there is this huge multi-billion dollar capital spend and it takes forever for them to start to get oil out of the ground is actually mistaken. It's much more fluid, which means that as oil prices begin to creep up as production comes off stream, what you'll see is them turning on the pumps. However, the weaker players in that marketplace will continue to suffer at the price levels that they are now. So, you could see high yield spreads and equities for the weaker players in the North American market begin to continue to suffer.
Talking about oil, is it really as simple as winners and losers? Or should we be thinking in a more nuanced way? Here's Joshua McCallum, head of fixed income economics at UBS Global Asset Management.
Surprisingly enough, it's one of the few areas where you can say it's pretty clear. Very often, when you're looking for winners and losers, there's nuance, and in some cases it will be. But broadly speaking, this is great for the consumers and bad for the producers. Now, there's been a number of commentators out there who've sort of trying to basically say, oh, this drop in oil price, it's actually a bad thing, which is great. I didn't know things could, when the oil price went up, it was a bad thing, and when it went down, it was a bad thing. I suppose maybe it's a bad thing when it stays the same. But they view it as, oh, it's a symptom of sort of global demand falling. Now, really, we think this is much, much more to do with supply.
How do certain producers mitigate the fiscal impact of lower oil prices? Kevin Allison.
OPEC members don't really have much choice other than to keep pumping. Saudi Arabia is really the only country inside of the OPEC alliance that has an ability to scale back production. A lot of the other countries, especially big producers like Venezuela, Iran, they require such high oil prices to meet their government budgets that no matter where the price goes, they've got to keep the oil going. They just need to get a hold of the cash. They need the hard currency. So I really don't see how OPEC can manage to cut without Saudi Arabia. I think that in the United States, fiscally, the producers kind of getting the hard end of it right now, the shale producers, they're already starting to pull in their reins a little bit. They're starting to cut spending. Overall, globally, oil majors have cut spending by about 24%. That's their forecast for 2015 spending. And in the States, it's even higher. It's something like 36%. And they're taking other actions in addition just to cutting investment. They're focusing on the most productive areas of the fields in which they're operating so that they can get at the oil that's the cheapest to get out of the ground. And they're also starting to really press their suppliers to cut costs or cut rental rates for things like drilling rigs. They're looking for lower labor costs, and they're expecting that to come through and start to really offset some of the pain that they've been going through as this sort of low price environment really takes hold. And so I think for the shale producers especially, it's an interesting period because no one's really quite sure where the break-even of the shale production will settle. It's going to take a long time of low prices, I think, to really reach a new equilibrium and to see exactly how low the price has to go in order to really hurt shale production.
And what about the Middle East perspective? In the short to medium term, what are the key factors in these markets? Marcus George is a correspondent based in Dubai.
Well, there's no doubt that eyes are on China and other large oil consumers where demand has dropped off because of the current state of their economy. We've seen a sort of bit of a flatlining in the Chinese economy, and that has certainly affected oil prices around the world. That's, the principal driver of what's going on. But secondly, OPEC countries, and there are many of those OPEC members around here in the Gulf states, which have been long-term oil producers, well, they've been challenging non-OPEC producers as such, saying they're irresponsible. And I think they've not directly said it, but sort of they point at US oil production, which has gone up markedly in the last few years, and other production of oil around the world, for saying, well, look, you know, this is irresponsible because effectively you're not balancing that supply-demand equation. What you're doing is just pouring oil into the world without any due respect to any other oil producer. And so I think that that's why they've taken this policy to maintain the OPEC quota, to ensure that obviously prices continue to sort of stay quite low. But what it does is take out that sort of, as they put it, that irresponsible oil production.
What are the asset class implications of a reduction in petrodollars? Well, there's been a big change, according to Joshua McCallum, between the decades of huge surpluses and investment into sovereign wealth funds and the situation now.
When these countries had huge surpluses, and they were putting a lot of this extra money into their sovereign wealth funds, who are investing it in different places. And very importantly, say when the oil price is high, and say you're Saudi Arabia and you're trying to maintain your currency against the US dollar, when the oil price is high, that means there's lots of money coming in. So there's lots of dollars coming in. And when money comes in, it has to be exchanged. So people are selling dollars and buying your currency. Well, when you're selling one thing and buying the other, it puts an upward pressure on the price. So you have to counter that by pushing money out again to balance it out. And very often, a lot of this would end up in, or via the sovereign wealth funds or the central bank reserves, and it would end up in safer assets. So things like government bonds and such like. So one of the concerns, one of the things that we were trying to drill down into is how much impact this reduction in the petrodollar flows would be, because all these pressures have shrunk now that the oil price shrinks. So looking at the numbers, what we find is that it's notable, but it's not going to be decisive.
What does Kurt Custard make of these changes?
Obviously, the current account surpluses of the oil exporting nations have been growing for many, many years, and they have huge amounts of assets sitting on their balance sheet. Now, with the low oil price being where it's at, those assets will fail to continue to accumulate. They will have a smaller current account surplus or maybe even go into current account deficit, depending on the country. That means when they recycle those, they've typically recycled those petrodollars into U.S. treasuries. And on the margin, we think that that means there will be less buyers for U.S. treasuries going forward than there has been historically. Now, that said, you still do have QE going on in Europe and in Japan, which on a global basis should outweigh any reduction in purchases by the petrodollar countries. However, it may have a modestly larger impact in the U.S. treasury market where the Fed has ended its QE.
Kevin Allison agrees that it's an intriguing debate.
Well, it's an interesting debate exactly what effect the lower oil revenues of foreign oil producers will have. Foreign oil producers have been pouring money into all kinds of investments. Think everything from oil country sovereign wealth funds, buying treasuries, or even investing outright in companies or farmland or other types of unusual investments. As the stock of petrodollars kind of drains due to lower prices, it should have some knock-on effects for those asset classes. And in theory, it should lead to a little bit lower demand for treasuries. It should lead to capital in general around the world becoming a little bit scarcer. And I think it's also going to lead to, we've seen the way that the US dollar has been rising. I would expect that to continue with its own knock-on effects for the world economy. There's a lot of moving parts. It's very difficult to make any firm conclusions about how it will all shake out. But I think that this kind of petrodollar drain is going to be a real thing.
How might lower oil prices influence the timing of an eventual rate hike by the US Federal Reserve? Kurt Custard.
I think the lower oil prices is pushing headline inflation lower. Now, generally, the Fed tries to look through headline inflation and focus on core inflation and wage growth in the United States. Employment growth remains very robust. So my guess is that the Fed is going to look through the drop in headline inflation. However, you know, if there is any impact it has on the Federal Reserve, it's going to be probably one to make them delay more than speed things up.
And here's Kevin Allison's view.
Well, I think that the lower price dividend that people are going to experience, what some people call the energy dividend, which is that consumers' pocketbooks just feel that little bit fatter because they're not paying so much for fuel, that will lead to a stronger economy. It should offset the pain that's going to be taking hold across the energy sector, where there's already been layoffs and where companies are cutting spending. It's going to help offset that. It's going to hopefully lead the unemployment rate to continue to go down to much closer to full employment. It should lead to ongoing strength in the economy, which should cement the Fed's decision to cut rates at some point. A lot of analysts expect it's going to be around the middle of this year.
Here with a closing thought from Chicago is Kurt Custard with a longer-term view, mindful of the best advice to clients and investors.
If you want to have a long-term view, you have to look at technology and population. And what we're seeing is, due to regulatory changes, the developed economies are getting much more energy efficient. All right, so you're starting to see CAFE standards, which is a fuel efficiency standards in the U.S., continue to creep up pretty dramatically over the next 10 years. In addition, you know, you're starting to see discussions about, you know, fully electric cars, et cetera. So the energy efficiency is increasing substantially and is going to probably continue to increase substantially going forward. The other big driver is what's called the substitution effect, which means that, you know, you can substitute one energy source for another energy source. And in the United States, particularly, natural gas is really inexpensive, and there's now a lot more pressure to start to substitute natural gas as an energy source for oil, which should also help keep oil prices down over the long haul. There's not a lot of technology that needs to be done to be able to allow that substitution effect to take place, but, you know, progress is being made. And my expectation is that both of these things, the energy efficiency as well as the substitution effect, will keep sort of the long-term pressure for oil less than it might have been forecast just a few years ago.
And that was Kurt Custard bringing us to the end of this 23rd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.